is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Watching the Russian economy under severe sanctions and, according to informants, prospering or growing quite unexpectedly or predictably, surging, everything for the front, all defense all the time, full employment. There are lots of things to be said. However, what is fixed is what about the $300 billion of assets that are outside of Russia's reach right now in possession of supervision by the EU, by NATO, by the U.S., by the finance ministers of the world. Michael Bernstab, he is at the Hoover Institution. He's also my guide on the Russian economy under severe sanctions. Michael, it's back. Every time we deal with what about the $300 billion and say this is not a good idea, confiscation can be overused, and be, by the way, there will be consequences if you start confiscating right now, because in future it will be cited as a precedent. However, that has not in any way stemmed the suggestions. Janet Yellen, you tell me, speaks up at a meeting of finance ministers in Brazil. And then, most important to me, the president of the European Commission, Ms. von der Leyen, speaks up saying, yes, we must look at it, not only the money for reconstruction of Ukraine, but the windfall profits of the $300 billion to be used for war fighting, for ammunition. Michael, they're moving the story very quickly. What, again, is it that they're debating, especially this term windfall profits? What is that, Michael? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you. And the third most important person, in addition to von der Leyen and Janet Yellen, is Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, who also endorsed, in one way or another, the proposal of confiscating either the assets or return of the assets in the form of proceeds and interest payments and coupon payments. But everyone is talking how to use these Russian assets because, for one reason only, because the Western pledge to finance the war in Ukraine, to finance Ukraine as a front line in the war, have failed. Failed because of the fighting in the United States Congress between the Senate and the House of Representatives, and the fighting in the European Union between various countries when Hungary didn't allow them and finally relented to allocate 50 billion euros for support of Ukraine. But of those 50 billion euros, they have raised only 17, and they expect within the next 4 years, it's a long time, to raise another 33 billion euros. So altogether, people look at this and say, okay, here is free money. Here is free money. Idle assets, Russian assets, frozen, sitting there, over 300 billion. By the estimate of the economists, 350 billion. Reuters said 375 billion. No one knows exactly. And those can be used to help Ukraine. And then the various proposals are coming to take only the returns of those assets, because some of the bonds, which are in these funds, matured. They matured, so they were redeemed by various Western governments, the money is sitting there, the proceeds. Suddenly they discovered the Euroclear, which keeps the euro-denominated assets. They discovered that they have 4.4 billion euros in profits. Then there is a tax. So the European governments are now trying to impose a 100% tax on those profits put either in the budget of the European governments or to put in Ukraine. So everyone pledged to support Ukraine. Everyone failed one way or another. And now they're looking at the Russian assets and confiscation of thereof. But this does not create a credible commitment to support, because they take it one time, they spent it one time, and what's next? So instead of setting up a long-term sustainable trust fund, set aside a certain amount of money and borrow from it and use it for support of Ukraine, they're trying to find out the way to bypass all these legal and financial restrictions.
And right now, because the significant voices of von der Leyen and Janet Yellen have voiced support for this idea, do we believe that it will go forward? And we have to mention the caveats. This is a precedent that's being established for subsequent conflict zones.
This will not go forward. they will try to do the small thing, like they found that they can raise $3.3 billion or €4 billion or another small amount from the proceeds, from the interest. But Liv Moistri, who is the chief executive officer of Euroclear, where the most funds denominated in euros are there, she pointed out correctly that whatever you confiscate the proceeds, you confiscate the interest, you confiscate the returns on assets, or you can, it's a partial confiscation of assets because returns belong to the owner of assets. So it sets the precedent anyway, it is confiscation. And so this is, they're trying to do, but because they could not agree before of that on financing and several billion dollars here and there, whereas governments couldn't agree, and they cannot agree on that either. So this is just prolonging this situation instead of coming up to a sustainable, credible way of financing Ukraine.
Headline, Reuters, Russia bans gasoline exports for 6 months from March 1st. Why? What happened?
Well, what happened that last year, Russia already banned export of diesel and gasoline for the agricultural harvesting season, and then again allowed that export because they needed money, they needed export revenues, foreign exchange. And now again, they're afraid that they will not have sufficient gasoline and diesel for agricultural sowing season, so they ban it for 6 months. But behind, so this is kind of a sectoral short-term problem, but there is a big problem there which they are not talking about, and it is inflation. Because the gasoline prices and diesel prices for domestic use are controlled, heavily subsidized. They're about half the market price, and the government pays the producers this, and prices already went up 5%. So they are afraid that they may have a sectoral inflation in agriculture that will spill over to other sectors, and they just published a staggering, frightening statistic that their producer prices, which eventually will become consumer prices, are up in January 2024, 19.5% over January 23. So the consumer prices are still only 7.5% up, but producer price index is 19.5%. And they're afraid of high inflation, which eventually will affect production.
And the central bank's interest rate is set at 16%. So there's a discrepancy here that has to be resolved. Correct, Michael? They have to work this out.
They may raise interest rates again, and they are especially afraid of the exchange rate because, again, a few days ago, the dollar jumped over 100 rubles for the dollar. They're waiting for presidential election on the 17th of March next month. And after that, they can release the exchange rate because they cannot support it with high inflation.
And the PPI at 19%. Can we expect that that will go higher then, given these forces that are weighing on the economy?
Well, it may go higher because the money supply has increased by 24.5%,
right.
By 25% over the last 12 months. And this means that inflation will sort of catch up. There is a lag. It will take time. But eventually, yes, and this will affect production.
Michael Bernstam, the Hoover Institution, watching Russia under severe sanctions after its invasion of Ukraine. I'm John Batchelor.